Hi, this is Christopher Perrin with Inside Classical Education. On this podcast program, I interview a variety of leaders, administrators, and educators on topics relating to classical Christian education and its ongoing recovery and renewal in the 21st century. Archives of previous interviews can be found at our blog and podcast site at www.insideclassicaled.com. This is Christopher Perrin with Inside Classical Education. Recently, I spoke with Ken Myers of Mars Hill Audio. We talked about some of the books that he thinks would be pertinent and appropriate for classical school educators to read. He touched upon six titles. First, James K.A. Smith's book, Desiring the Kingdom, Worship, Worldview, and Cultural Formation. Todd Gitlin's book, Media Unlimited. The book, Mediated, How the Media Shapes Your World and the Way You Live in It, by Thomas de Zengotita. He also mentioned Julian Johnson's book, Who Needs Classical Music?, Beauty for Truth's Sake, by Stratford Caldecott, and two books by Jeremy Begbie, Resounding Truth and Music Theology and Time. Our conversation follows. Ken, you read a lot, and you've also gotten to know something about the classical Christian education renewal movement. As you connect the two, what books would you recommend for classical school administrators, leaders, and educators to read?
Well, you already mentioned James Smith's. I think that's one that Desiring the Kingdom, which I think I would mention of the more recent ones. I think also, and this reflects my own preoccupation with media, I think that two books that I've done interviews about that aren't about education, but they are about, I think, the kind of shape of desires among young people. Mm-hmm. Todd Gitlin's book, Media Unlimited, in which he suggests that it's about a lot of things, but among them is the idea that one of the effects of the kind of media life that's typical among contemporary people is that he talks about a new way of having emotions, and that we now expect experiences that are intense, immediate, and disposable. That we want experiences that come to us in a hurry, that are conveniently intense, but we want to be able to move on to the next intense experience easily and disposable. It seems to me to be exactly the opposite of the kind of receptivity that's necessary to be educated, to be discipled. And I think that there's a lot of wisdom in Gitlin's book on what needs to be overcome if kids are kind of shaped in the conventional way by media. The other book is a book called Mediated by Thomas de Zengotita, who talks even more subtly, I think, about the shape of the soul as the experience with mass media individually, but how collectively so much of our society is shaped by media and by the idea of a particular idea of mediation. Mm-hmm. He talks about how you walk through a city, and he actually talks about walking in Times Square, which is not a typical city, but how we are assaulted by so many carefully crafted messages that are fine-tuned to address us in some way, and what effect that has on the soul, that we, rather than encountering something that is that may make demands by its nature, we're assaulted by very direct appeals to desire very often. And I think he does a great job at describing the kind of disorientation of the soul that is characteristic. So I think those kinds of books, I think, would be helpful. Did you want to?
Well, he also describes being alone in nature.
Contrast. Yeah, absolutely.
And what that does for the soul as well.
Right.
This relates to classical Christian education too, because there's how do we balance, what do we put before children? What do we represent to them? What do we mediate to children in the classroom and in our schools? Can you describe that contrast?
In being exposed to a natural order, again, you're exposed to something that's there on its own terms. I mean, I think there's this, I guess in philosophical terms, you could say it's closer to being in some way. And you're exposed to something that invites a kind of engagement, with the thing as it is, rather than the thing as a tool to something else. It's an order that you, in a sense, have to submit to. I think, again, Lewis's idea of conforming the soul to reality, rather than an order that's there because it fits your desires. And I do think that's a subtle idea that takes a lot of time. And one of the reasons we actually moved to the country 20 some years ago was precisely because I felt I needed to force myself to be in a situation that was, in a sense, bereft of human control, that was a kind of natural order rather than the product of artifice. Not that artifice is wrong, but that I needed to, for my own reasons, be forced to be present to creation in a kind of pristine sense. Now thinking of other books for educators, there was one I thought of a minute ago and blanked on it now. Well, I think I, as you know, I gave a paper earlier this year at a conference on fine arts education for classical Christian schools, and talked about the challenge of fine arts education in a culture where all of us are encouraged to think of ourselves as consumers, as sovereign consumers. And one of the books I quoted in that paper is Julian Johnson's book, Who Needs Classical Music? Which I think is an interesting, again, he's not addressing pedagogy, but he is addressing the question of the training of the affections implicitly, because he talks about how the modern notion of musical taste as a kind of infallible and idiosyncratic thing, that each individual's taste is something that it's just who they are, and the idea that you would train their taste in some way is just unimaginable. And so he does deal with that a little bit, and then looks also at how at the way music that's developed to convey some kind of reality, what kinds of demands it makes on listeners. I said earlier that one of my real interests is in music, and I think that that our culture's assumptions about the kind of thing music is and the kinds of institutions that we need in order to sustain the reality that music is has changed so dramatically in the last 50 years. And I think that that's something that schools, I don't know how strong music is I know schools differ from school to school. And I know that it wasn't part of the initial vision of a lot of the pioneers in the classical Christian school movement. Stratford Caldicott, in his book Beauty for Truth's Sake, that's another book I'd recommend, laments the fact that Dorothy L. Sayers never got to the quadrivium and kind of dismissed the quadrivium, music being among the quadrivium, and the sense that the trivium is there so that you can pursue the quadrivium. Mm-hmm. And that it seems to me that music not, you know, takes it up another notch, takes our engagement with the shape of creation up another notch. Mm. When you learn about how fugues work, for instance, so I think you are learning something about the structure of creation in some way. Jeremy Begbie is brilliant on this, by the way, and in his book Resounding Truth, which I've interviewed him about that, and he wrote an earlier book on music theology and time, in which he talks about how music orders our experience of time. Again, how we think about time or how we feel about time is tied to how we, whether we regard materiality and its temporal aspects to be a good thing or a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Time is regarded by most modern people as a problem. So mm-hmm. we have technologies to save time, or we talk about wasting time or spending time. But the idea that living in time and delighting in time mm-hmm. is itself a great blessing, mm-hmm. great possibility. Mm-hmm. That things that take time are wonderful. That's such a novel idea. Mm-hmm. Music is music, it seems to me, that constructed. So, I mean, people have often said music is a way of ordering time. We think of music as a way of ordering sound. Well, it's more, mm-hmm. almost more a way of ordering time mm-hmm. and our perception of time. So, so those books on music that I mentioned, I would think would be great, great help. And again, that gets back to the classical assumption, as I mentioned before, that the shaping of the soul works toward a kind of harmony. And, excuse me, that metaphor of harmony is used to reflect very explicitly the idea that there's a harmony in the nature of things which has to be perceived. Mm-hmm. So music is a kind of window into some bigger order of some mm-hmm. kind.
Ken Myers of Mars Hill Audio on the subject of those books that he thinks are pertinent for classical school administrators to read. This is Christopher Perrin with Inside Classical Education, found on the web at insideclassicaled.com.